And welcome to the third edition of Exploring Enterprise, the new podcast series from the Enterprise Research Centre. I'm Dr. Vicky Belt, Deputy Director at the ERC, and today I'm joined by Professor Stephen Roper, Director of the ERC, Jane Goldsworthy, Managing Director of Oxford Innovation Services, and Alex Toft, Head of Minerva Business Angels. The theme for today's session is supporting innovative startups. So, Stephen, over to you first. Business innovation has been a key theme of your work at the ERC. Can you tell us why having innovative businesses is so important and what the research tells us about them?
So I suppose I've been working on innovation in businesses for longer than I like to remember, Vicky. And I guess one of the things that you're constantly impressed about with businesses is the way that they bring new technologies and new knowledge to market to solve new challenges. So when we think about innovation, what we're thinking about is products, new processes, new services, new business models very often that firms kind of bring to market to add value to consumers and to their workforce and to their shareholders. And I guess that there are a number of kind of key things that we've learned over the years looking at large populations of innovative companies across the UK and indeed other countries. The first is that innovative firms tend to grow faster. They tend to export more than firms which are not innovating, and they learn as well from that exporting process. And they tend to be more highly productive than firms which are not innovating. And I suppose one other aspect of this, which is very interesting, is that innovative firms also tend to be more resilient when market conditions turn tough. And that's particularly relevant, perhaps, at the moment.
Great. And today's podcast is focusing on startup businesses in particular, or early stage businesses. So what do we know about innovative startups in the UK in particular?
Yeah, so we have about 250,000 startup businesses in the UK in a normal year. Of course, the last year has not been normal, and we'll come back to that a bit later on, perhaps. But around 20% of those startups are what we might think about as ambitious businesses. They start up with a view to growing that business on to be of something of significance. A lot of businesses start small and stay small, and they're a little less ambitious. It's those growing businesses, or the businesses that have an ambition to grow, that are typically the innovators. They're in all sectors and in all parts of the country. But a kind of critical group within that might be university spin-out companies. And again, this is maybe a bit of a theme of our conversation later. We have around 300 to 500 spin-outs a year, and some of these would be among the most innovative businesses that we see across the UK. And they face very particular challenges in bringing very advanced new technologies often to market. And that can be a very long process, 3, 5, 10 years, requiring a huge amount of investment very often at that sort of radical innovation end. So it's a very diverse landscape of new startups, but within the overall group of startups, we have these very exciting and innovative groups of firms which have very particular kind of support needs. And those are really the innovative startups that I wanted to focus on this morning.
Great. Turning to you now, Alex, you work directly with these businesses. You lead a business, Minerva Business Angels, that invests directly in innovative businesses in the Midlands area. Can you tell us more about what Business Angels do, and in particular what you do at Minerva?
Okay, Business Angels, it's often comes with probably a false impression that they have this idea that they are some altruistic individual with lots of bags of money that come and invest in businesses. Invariably, business angels are people who've had a relatively successful career. They may want to invest a small amount of money, sometimes 5, 10, 15, 20,000. And what they want to do is they want to give something back. So it's more than just about, it's equity with experience. And that's what's the important point. So basically what Minerva does is that we're part of the University of Warwick Science Park, and we operate mainly in the Midlands, as you said, and we've operated through a network of university partnerships. And that's to deliver a group of investors co-localised around, for example, Warwick or around Nottingham or Birmingham or Aston universities. So we can try to attract people in. And what we do is we're really seeking to address what is a market failure in that many spin-outs, when they come, when they go through what they call the early stage, the family, friends and fools, were basically it's just an idea. They're trying to build that idea. They're trying to come with a minimum viable product. And then we kind of get beyond that, but where do they go? So that's where business angels become more important, because then they invest into those areas. So, for example, Minerva, since its formation, which is 2010, we've invested in over 100 businesses, 16 million in actual physical investment. And what we've also done is we've also brought along other capital into that pool, because once an angel invests, he tends to validate it. But we've done a bit more than that as well. We started the Super Startup Club during lockdown, and the concept behind that is trying to work and identify those best spin-outs in this case. And we work with the micro-universities, which is the 8 Russell universities. And what we're trying to do there is trying to build an ecosystem of support, because it's private capital can be very important in the development of a business. And like Stephen says, we were early investors in early spin-outs, and we look at business from all across the country. We may be based in the Midlands, but we're not restricted to a geographical location. And what we've seen is that some of the early businesses are taking 10 to 14 years to basically come to a gestation period. And as Stephen said, some of them never even get there. They become zombie companies. The entrepreneur is quite happy to bubble along the bottom. And we're trying to find those companies which have aspirational innovation, and they want to become scale-ups. Because one of the biggest challenges that we have as part of the landscape challenge and leveling up agenda is that making our startups become scale-ups. And scale-ups are fast-growing companies, typically 20% a year. So they're on a growth trajectory. Maybe they'll become the next unicorn, whatever. So again, we want to try to identify and support those. So we look at across the whole section that's going on there. And in those businesses, they're not at a stage where they can get venture capital yet. But even though we invest in them early, we continue to support them. We continue to invest them. Even when they go to the Series A, B, C or D, we will continue to support them. And in fact, the angel community is a very loyal, steadfast community with a network of contacts and network of support for a lot of these businesses.
So how do you go about identifying these innovative businesses? What kind of things are you looking for?
Well, I think we start off firstly is it's very much about the entrepreneur. But what is the entrepreneur bringing to the table? Of course, the entrepreneur has to have a bit more than an idea. And it we'd be preferably like more than one person, because if somebody happens to that one person, you may be in a bit of a pickle. So first of all, who are they, what they're bringing, what they have, what is the idea, what is the strength of the idea? Because ultimately, we can't do much due diligence on the company. We have to very much focus on the individual. And it's not just the individual, of course, but that's where we have the starting point. Of course, the idea is important. The intellectual property is important of that idea. And in this new world, we're seeing maybe spin-outs slightly favour, should we say, startups in general, because people are looking for that intellectual property that a business has. It's a bit more security that comes along with the business. So that's what we do. If it's a team, and the team's always slightly better, and they can be advisors, they can be individuals, we can make good any shortfall in that team. But the fundamental idea has to have strength in it. And the next phase is ultimately, we like to see evidence of traction. Everybody can come up with an idea, but then they have to validate it that the market wants it. I mean, Mark Twain said there's no such thing as a new idea. And that's invariably true. And what we see is people constantly say health and well-being, and suddenly you get a plethora of opportunities in health and well-being. So we're looking for those nuggets of uniqueness, ultimate selling proposition that has strength and has some validation in the market that it is required. And that can be early sales. If it's not early sales, it can be, for example, Gary Andy Murray onto your board, or Andy Murray as an investment, as we recently seen with a collagen product, or it can be Usain Bolt, as we recently saw with a Sue Scholl opportunity. So, you know, there are lots of ways, but it's the core strength that we may see in those.
And going to you, Jane, you also work with directly with these businesses too, Oxford Innovation Services. I think you do something slightly different. So I wondered if you could give us an overview of the kinds of business support you provide when these businesses are first setting up.
Thanks, Vicky. I mean, Oxford Innovation was established over 30 years ago with the mission to support entrepreneurs in Oxfordshire with business advice, flexible space and access to early stage investment. Our founders were Martin and Audrey Wood, who led the first spin out from the university, Oxford Instruments, in 1959. And they created Oxford Innovation to provide entrepreneurs with the support that they struggled to find when they were starting out. And those are the three main things that we still do today, although we operate across the UK on a much, much bigger scale now. So we run 26 innovation centres where we partner with a range of building owners to create an environment, a community for entrepreneurs. We deliver business advisory programs where we're working one-to-one with the leaders of ambitious businesses. And like Minerva, we also have an angel investment network where we're connecting early stage companies with our network of 350 investors who are based mainly in the southeast. And the type of support that we provide to startups varies according to the needs of each business, but the first thing that we would always do is to make sure that the company's got a really well thought through and robust business model, because that's really the foundation upon which everything is everything stands. Once that's in place, we tend to see three big areas of need from innovative startups. One is around securing significant traction with customers. So often startups have a sort of part developed solution, which is looking for a clearly defined problem. So part of what we would help them do is to narrow down the problem, who owns it, and who's going to pay for the solution that they're developing, and how to reach those customers. Second big area where we would provide support is around connecting them into the ecosystem, really, so that they can connect with the range of external support, advice, non-exec directors that they need to grow their business, because typically they've got very limited skills and expertise within the company, just purely by nature of the size that it is. So they really do need to be able to find additional support to plug some of the gaps that they have. And the third big area is around securing external finance, as pretty much all of these innovative startups are going to need to bring in some type of external finance. So we help them to identify the best type for their business and their growth plans, and also how to produce a really effective pitch or application for that funding.
You said one really interesting thing, I think, there, which was that this is so much about the individual business, you know, and it strikes me that both in what you've said and what Alex has said, the sort of bespoke nature of the support that's necessary for these, you know, in these businesses, and getting the right support at the right time is a really interesting kind of thing. So it's got to be that very responsive kind of support that you're providing. So how do you manage that? Because that strikes me as a really kind of difficult thing to manage and deliver, you know, within an innovation centre.
I guess, I mean, the main thing is to make sure that you've got really good business advisors. So the people that are providing the support and the people in our team are typically they've got really strong commercial backgrounds themselves. They've often got personal experience of growing businesses, and they're able to take a really good holistic look at the business to work out what their key challenges are going forwards. And we also have a range of business diagnostics called Growth Mapper, which we use as part of that initial discussion with the business to really focus in on the key areas for that business, you know, the things that are really going to unblock their growth.
We're trying to build on that because what we see is the inventor investor mentor. I mean, I like to category mentors into, like you say, the experienced people. And the investor mentor, where they're willing to put personal stake into the business and they bring that experience with us. And I think that's one of the things we think is most lacking in the current ecosystems, because it's that level of commitment. Like you say, they've got that experience and they're willing to come along with their money as well. So it gives a level of support. And it's the old adage, for example, youth and age can be an excellent mix in terms of providing that experience. I already haven't trodden that path. And again, that's one of the main challenges, is getting those people involved and engaged with these types of opportunities.
Jane, you mentioned Oxford Innovation has been set up for over 30 years. What over that time, how has the sort of support that you've provided to businesses changed, and how the needs of the businesses changed over that time?
I think that's such an interesting question, because at one level, there are certain things which remain the same, you know, so advice, finance, you know, somewhere to locate your business and to grow, and they're all really still important. But I think there are a lot more options open to businesses at the moment. You know, so there's a range in terms of space, there's co-working space, innovation centres, all sorts of different options. In terms of taking on or working with people and talent, there's so many different options there now, because people have different working patterns. You know, you can have employees, associates, consultants. There's lots of opportunities for taking on graduate placements through universities. So there's just a lot more variety available to startups in the ecosystem. And I think the same goes for financial products as well. Just, you know, over the last 5 years, the number of different financial products that have been created in the marketplace, that's really just exploded. So, you know, one of the challenges for businesses is actually they've got a lot of choice now. So it's about understanding which is the best one for them and what they're trying to do with their business.
And in terms, obviously, at the moment, we've seen a huge effect from the pandemic, COVID-19 pandemic, on businesses in particular, and that's created, obviously, huge change over the last 18 months. So it's turning to you, Stephen. What does the research tell us about this, how this has affected startups in particular and innovation activity?
I think the research evidence on startups and the impact of the pandemic is still rather sketchy, Vicky, to be honest. We know we have some numbers we don't believe, some numbers look completely unreasonable. So I think we're still in a sort of situation where we're relying on anecdote a little in terms of the startup world, at least. And I think that one of the things I think is very evident is that there probably has been an increase in the number of businesses starting up. And that may simply reflect the fact that many people have been made redundant over the last few months. They've been looking for other opportunities to start businesses or to make an income. And so that leads to startup in some situations. In other cases, it's led to sort of business closures where some subcontract arrangements have stopped working. But the other more interesting sort of straw in the wind is that talking to some people who are involved in business support over the last few months does suggest that there's been quite an increase in the quality of the startups that they have seen coming through. And that, I think, is really an interesting one and bodes very well for the future, that if that is the case, those quality startups, those high quality startups, will be Alex's scale-ups of the future. And that's a really positive aspect of all of this, I think, in what is a really dire situation, clearly. If we've done a little bit of work within Innovate UK client companies as well. So these are our businesses that are established businesses, but very much at the more innovative end of the distribution. So they'd be in our ambitious 20%, I suppose, of existing firms. And they've been hit very hard by the pandemic, many of them, with very hard, big hits on cash flow, big hits on liquidity. And what we've seen there is very much a sort of reordering of priorities with a focus on sort of short-term investment, maintaining cash flow, and a reduction in investments in research and development and innovation spending. And the projections are that those, I think, from those businesses, that those cuts in R&D and innovation spending may well carry on for a little while. Because the liquidity situation will be difficult. So that probably slows the progress of those companies in terms of growth and ambition and time to market in many situations. It's not the case for everybody. Some companies have done very well and they will have increased their R&D and innovation spend. And that's true of about one in 10 Innovate UK clients, but about one in three have said that they are likely to kind of reduce spend, and in many cases quite significantly. So you've got a bit of a polarization perhaps of firms that are continuing to invest and those that are stopping investing. But the startup story, I think, is one that's still to be written. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out over the next year or so.
Alex, how's that bearing out on the ground with the businesses that you have been in contact with?
Well, yes, we are seeing a better quality, and it depends where you define the startup and scale-up break. But we can say generally the startups are a better quality. And I think the reason of that is there's been a shakeout, basically, of a lot of the companies that previously had an idea. I think it's one of the slightly perverse things that we get with the SEIS, and that's the tax incentive scheme that where you can get a 50% clawback on your income tax or you can get other tax relief. And the problem with that is that some businesses previously that may have got some of that SEIS money, because basically people were prepared to take a punt, people are more focused in how they're taking their punts now. So this is just for the really early stage, which is only 2 years old. And we've seen what basically the businesses coming to us are a lot stronger. They've got a lot stronger proposition. They've got a lot stronger team. And in fact, we've seen some fantastic businesses. And hopefully one of those that we've recently seen is very much on the path to become a unicorn. And we've seen some very interesting technology. I suppose the only other thing that kind of concerns me is we talk about innovation and what innovation does. But we mustn't forget that some of the hardcore manufacturing businesses that sometimes gets lost in all this. And what we're not seeing in that respect, we're not so much seeing the family traditional businesses changing anyway or seek to grow where they need to grow. And they need to be encouraged to really address the way that they're approaching things. So there is a secondary market out there, which is the traditional industry, the steel fabricators, the assemblers, and etc. And that's something that we frequently forget, but mustn't forget in this whole innovation cycle that we talk about.
If I could just come in on that point, Vicky, because we run a manufacturing growth program, so we're working with a number of businesses just like the ones Alex has described, and I think we do need to remember that they've been through a pretty torrid time, in particular manufacturers, with all the changes associated with leaving the EU, as well as COVID, and there's a lot of inflationary pressure around the cost of raw materials as well. So I think they're feeling a lot more optimistic now, but I think they've still got quite a lot of ground to recover to get back to where they were 18 months ago and to feel far more confident and in control of their businesses and at the point where they're sort of ready to make significant investments.
And I think that's critical, Jane, isn't it? That sense of confidence in the future, because we're looking at things like net zero transitions and moves towards more digital, and those are inevitably going to require investment in these businesses. And without that kind of confidence in the future, I think it's really difficult for people to make that next step and make those investments very often, particularly in a climate where they may already be carrying quite a lot of debt from the last couple of years, perhaps. So, yeah, I think it's a really interesting point, I think.
And one thing that I, one of my pet favourite subjects that we hear headline news is we say hear about gigafactories, which are pretty hot, but nobody ever thinks about the infrastructure that's going to be required for those gigafactories and all the other things that we're going to need to deliver the gigafactories, even down to the fundamental accessing raw materials for them. And you know, that's one of the things that, that's really important. We're very good at headlines, but we need to dig deeper into what the requirements are of the economy in that respect.
Yes, and another sort of key theme in terms of businesses at the moment and their, is their contribution to the whole levelling up agenda too. So this is another sort of policy concern, which has obviously been in the news a lot and is in the news currently as we speak. So both of you have talked already a little bit about how you work with local partners and organisations as part of a larger business support ecosystem. Alex, can you just explain a little bit more about that and the contribution you think you can make to the Levelling Up agenda, perhaps in the Midlands?
Yeah, in terms of the Levelling Up agenda, yeah, we do obviously work with other institutions. We also work with West Midlands Combined Authority. We're very much networked into the innovation ecosystem. And we're even active in Merseyside as well, where it has many common challenges that we see in the West Midlands. I think the Levelling Up agenda is an interesting one. I don't think it's just going to be solved with money. We have the Midlands Engine Investment Fund as a way of injecting cash. I think we still very much struggle from the fact that we don't see enough private equity and the expertise that comes with that active in the region. And that's something we're desperately trying to do. We're trying to engage with those local successful entrepreneurs instead of watching their money go south as they go to investment funds or EIS funds. And one of the things we don't have very much of in the Midlands is venture capitalist funds. We have very few active venture capitalists. They can travel on train, but we don't actually see them locally in our region and have active in that. So my fundamental goal in life at the moment is to try to get that engagement from the private experienced equity investor. I often frequently say, you know, if they're a Martian, I don't care. Just please come in, work with us, deliver your expertise. It's not just about your money. It's about your expertise. On the other side, in terms of developing the business and the technology, I think we have a really good infrastructure in the West Midlands. And we're very, very lucky in that respect. We have lots of incubators, lots of accelerators. We haven't enjoyed some of the central government funding that other areas of the UK have. And that's something that has led to a little bit of disparity. But it doesn't mean that we can't do something ourselves. And one of the things I am working with is the West Midlands Combined Authority and how we can inject to support startups. The British Business Bank is always coming out with initiatives, as is the institution of scale-ups, and we have some roundtables ongoing there. So my main role is to give my opinion, to give my views, and to try to get more investment for the companies who come through it. Through more investment, better quality companies, it will stimulate an ecosystem that will develop itself. And a good example of that is what a guy called Brad Feld did in Boulder, Colorado, where they had no ecosystem in terms of investment ecosystem. And good companies bring investment, bring opportunities, bring corporate investment, create jobs and grow. That's how Silicon Valley started.
And Jane, turning to you, in your area, Oxford is a different kind of area, though I believe you work all over the country. But could you tell us something about how you work with local partners?
Yeah, I mean, we work in the North, the Midlands, the Southwest, and the Southeast. So we've obviously got experience of lots of different types of ecosystems. And we work with lots of different partners across those areas. We come at this very much from a sort of a business-centric view of the world. And that means that an important part of our role is to understand all the other support that's available, both locally, regionally, and nationally, and make sure that the businesses that we're working with are connected into the right type of support at the, you know, when they need it. And I think, you know, one thing that's quite important to remember is that if you're trying to build and develop the local innovation ecosystem, yes, it's important to have the sort of building blocks there. So you need a good supply of finance, you need strong research institutions, you need good business, you know, physical spaces and skills training providers. But the other thing that's really important is that they've got to be really well connected. So they've got to be joined. They've got to be joined up. And I guess we see an important part of our role as being trying to connect the parts of the ecosystem together to make it easier for businesses to navigate around.
And Stephen, is there anything that we know from the research in this area on what makes effective business ecosystems that might sort of shed light on this?
I think it's all of the things that Alex and Jane have been talking about, Vicky. I mean, you certainly need good quality business support for when businesses do need that. You certainly need the availability of finance. We haven't really mentioned skills today, which is a critical kind of area for everybody. And that can easily stifle growth. Jane mentioned premises before. That's also critical. And we know that there are parts of the West Midlands where, you cannot get suitable property for some types of development. But that plays out in other sectors as well, where, we might have lots of incubators and accelerators, as Alex was saying, but do we have much sort of flexible lab space in the West Midlands? I'm not sure that we're quite as well equipped for that as we might be. If companies in, chemistry want to expand, are there places where they can go and develop based on our campuses? So there are some challenges for us, I think, around that still. But I'm with Alex and Jane. I think that in many parts of the country there is a pretty strong ecosystem, and certainly if you look internationally, certainly outside Europe, our ecosystem in the UK compares relatively well to that internationally, I think, although there are some weaknesses.
Well, that's encouraging in many ways, isn't it? Before we finish, obviously we've talked about a lot of issues and there's a lot of complexity here in terms of supporting businesses, but if you could whittle it down to the key priorities, and looking ahead particularly to the next year, which is going to be especially challenging, what would you say were the main priorities in terms of practical actions we need to take to support innovative startups? So if I turn to you first, Stephen.
So we should say a positive thing first, Vicky, which is that I think the Help to Grow and the Help to Grow Digital schemes are potentially quite helpful. Those were Sunak introductions. We played a minor part in ERC in sort of providing some of the background research for those programmes. And I think they stand to help quite a number of our kind of innovative startup companies and small companies grow into scale-ups over the next 3 years. So those are very positive initiatives. I think there are other things that we've got going on which we really need to scale quite quickly. And I'll identify iCure as one of those things, which I think could be very easily expanded across more universities, and to give that's a scheme that enables spin-out companies to access market opportunities and a model for that. I think that's a superb model. It's proven itself, I think, and that's one of the things that I would be looking to develop. I think there's changes that we could make to the R&D tax credit. Following some international experience, which would make it more accessible to creative businesses, where much of the vibrancy in the UK economy is currently coming from, and also to make it more valuable to pre-revenue businesses in the long line of kind of the gap between lab and marketplace that Alex was referring to earlier. And I would be giving more money to Oxford Innovation, because businesses need the kind of support that they offer, it is great when it's available, but it's still not available in many parts of the country. So I personally think that strengthening that business support ecosystem remains a priority going forward.
I'll hand to you then, Jane, to come back to that. I don't think you're going to in terms of priorities, what you're thinking.
Well, thank you, Stephen, first of all, for your comment. Much appreciated. But I guess the other things that I've been thinking about is, so there's the Innovate UK Edge service, which is the advisory support given to Innovate UK grant recipient businesses. So typically these are innovative startups. And that scheme, the level of funding has been doubled during the last year, with sort of... due to part of the COVID response. And I think it would be fantastic if that level of funding could continue going forwards. I think over the next year, we're going to see the transition from ERDF funding to the Shared Prosperity Fund. And it would be really nice to see SPF funding models move away from ERDF models, which are quite focused on inputs, you know, sort of 12 hours assists, and moving towards delivery models that are far more focused on achieving outputs for local economies. And I think it would also be worth looking at the EIS and SEIS limits to ensure that there is sufficient incentive there to get enough early stage funding coming through for these startups.
Great, thank you. And finally to you, Alex.
Hey, so first of all, one of my key themes is that we seem to sometimes neglect the importance of private capital. We see a lot of public state aid intervention, and I think we need to be revolutionary. We've been doing it for quite a few years now, and I don't think we're necessarily getting the results that we want to get. And therefore, I think a slightly different flavour of approach may be beneficial. And again, it gets down to that expertise and expertise being brought into companies. I think if we sit in the Midlands and we look at those companies in the South, they tend to come to us better prepared from the South, particularly in London. They're well educated in the skills of raising cash, even from the pitch deck. And that's one thing that I think we need to look at from our own innovation networks. People frequently go for numbers, how many companies have been through an innovation funnel. And in reality, what we want to do is make sure there's a quality sublayer on there, because we want to make sure the best get supported and then they can come forward. On the iCure, we are involved in iCure, and what we're doing is we're doing an early intervention program so we can get support for these early entrepreneurs who've got some promising ideas and seek to get the support to them by getting them connected with investors again. And again, obviously my common theme is, you know, investor engagement and getting people. SEIS is a very positive scheme. And although in terms of its uses has somewhat declined, we have to ask why. And again, I think it's all about investor education, angel education and awareness outside the Southeast, where the majority, something like 55 to 60% of the money goes. So there are those some major challenges in that respect. In terms of qualities of companies, in some respects, I'd argue we do see the quality. We have to make sure we support them. We've only had one really unicorn in the West Midlands, which was Gymshark. And we have to question ourselves, why is that the case? Have we lost them? Have they gone elsewhere, or have we just not generated them? Because what happens when people move down south, for example, when they move to Oxford, you know, they then become the entrepreneurs of the future. They make their fortune, they stay in Oxford, and they reinvest. So although we have these hubs, like we call about the Golden Triangle, we do need to get better distribution of some of these good startups and supported them, because ultimately, for example, they bring other corporate investors, other jobs, other international multinationals to those regions. So it all starts at the base in getting that ecosystem right and seeing how we can support them better. But don't forget the money. And I think that's one of the things people forget. They forget the money. Fortunately, in the educational system, we're seeing better education of graduates and the importance of growth capital.
Thank you, Alex. Unfortunately, we're out of time now, but how great to finish on a call for revolutionary action. So thank you very much today for all of your contributions, Stephen, Alex and Jane. Thank you too for listening to this podcast, those listening in. If you enjoyed it and you're interested in finding out more about what we do at the ERC, please visit our website at www.enterpriseresearch.ac.uk. Thank you for listening.